So yesterday after the show, I'm recording some other programs, and I get an urgent text from my pastor telling me that Deacon Kevin with Catholic Charities would like to speak to me. I'm thinking, oh, boy.
Uh-oh. You haven't heard that since high school, right?
This is like get to the headmaster's office now. Yeah, right. You've been called in. So I got in touch with him. And by the way, I happen to see you on the news, the noon news, too. And over the years, I've been in some different markets, and I have dealt with people from other Catholic charity organizations. And I could immediately tell, seeing you on TV, that you weren't like the others, that you were different. So I actually look forward to talking with you. We had a great conversation yesterday afternoon. And by the way, you're a deacon, and you need to explain, especially to the non-Catholics listening, because I saw you on TV, and I'm thinking, are you a diocesan deacon? Do you belong to an order? Mm-hmm. So explain what a deacon is.
Sure. A deacon is a servant. A deacon is a Catholic clergyman. So I'm an ordained minister in the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And yet I can be married clergy. Diocesan deacons, if they were married before their ordination,
right,
can be married and have children. I have 7 kids. Been married almost 25 years.
Wow.
And the deacon's role is to, when the Mass is ended, they say, go out into the world. And so the deacon leads people out into the world to serve, to evangelize.
Right. What is the difference for the lay person out there? There are things that a priest can do that you can't. What are the differences?
Well, a deacon can baptize, a deacon can marry, a deacon can bury. A deacon assists at Mass, but a priest is the one who celebrates Mass,
who
brings us the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. And a priest also hears confession, and that part of anointing of the sick that brings the healing, the forgiveness of sin, is reserved to the priest as well.
Okay.
So there's 3 sacraments that a deacon is not able to perform, but really we are a part of the Catholic clergy and a growing part.
How long have you been a deacon?
I was ordained about 4.5 years ago, so I'm a new guy.
Okay. And talk to me about, how did you get involved in Catholic Charities, and what exactly is your title over there, your role?
I'm the executive director of Catholic Charities at this point. I've been executive director for 7 or 8 years and have been with the organization like 11 years, I suppose. I started off when we built a new building. Catholic Charities has a $19 million building up on Apache and Harvard,
right?
72,000 square feet, a great facility. I was brought in to help plan that and then to help fundraise that for the executive director at the time and our bishop, Bishop Edward Slattery.
Okay. One of the when I had this conversation yesterday with him, first question I said is, have you listened to the program? Which he had not, because he generally doesn't get up this early in the morning, or is not able to listen to the radio at that time in the morning. And he had heard through other people that I had John Bennett on the program. And I told him a couple things. I said, first of all, we put all of that up on our podcast page. I told him, I said, and I think I'm speaking for you too, we weren't all that impressed with Mr. Bennett's performance on the program. He was making some claims that, you know, he really couldn't back up as far as dozens of Syrians being in Jinx. We now know that it's 3. And one of the things he said that I actually came back and had to clarify on air, he says, you know, we want to know who these people are and where they are. Okay. And I came back from the commercial break, the news break, and I said, look, I said, first of all, I said, we don't even know how many people we're talking about here. I said, it could be 1 or 2. I said, it could be a couple dozen, all right? But before anybody goes, you know, demanding that they be identified, think about this. What if they are Christian Syrians who are escaping persecution, you know, and they're seeking asylum here? I think we would want to welcome those people, and we certainly don't want to disrupt their lives by outing them. So I'm apprehensive about, you know, calls to quickly identify somebody like that. So we reset, and I think we did the responsible thing on air. Now let's talk about, you were involved with placing these 3 Assyrians in Jinx. It started back in what, 2012?
That's right. What happens typically with a refugee situation is that there's a family who lives in a local community, and in this case there's
in other words, they've got to have family there.
That's
or some relatives.
They have a family who's been here for decades, and they're U.S. citizens and productive citizens, business owners. And they saw the war breaking out in Syria and said, I have family over there that I think are in harm's way. And so in any war, when you've got family in the United States, you look to them because we're the leaders in serving and bringing people over and getting things straightened out. So this family applied to the State Department and said, we would like to have filing an affidavit of relationship is what the term is called, saying that we're the family member and we'd like to bring my brother, his wife, and child into the United States. At that point, the State Department has to say yes or no. And there's very few slots that come in a particular year.
Right.
The State Department did say yes in that case. They then hand it over to the Department of Homeland Security. They look at it. They do health screenings. FBI looks at it. Other intelligence agencies look at it. Okay. And if they say it is a good case, then they'll pass it back to the State Department with an approval, and then they can come in. Now, a lot of the debate, a lot of the national debate is on whether or not they're doing a good job with that, Homeland Security, FBI, security agencies. And I think that debate is fine to take place. You know, I think we want it to be safe. We want it to be a prudent process that's very well vetted. Yeah. Because if not, we're in big trouble.
When you get involved, though, you don't solely rely on the federal government vetting them. You do some vetting on your own. Is that correct?
We do have to go. We go actually to the family's residence. We do home visits with them before. We work with the family before they come. Okay. And then we actually stay with the family after they've arrived and go back and do more home visits and work with them and so forth. There's a lot that goes into a particular case.
Again, we are talking with the head of Catholic Charities here in Tulsa. One of the things I want you to break this news because this to me, and we need to point out too that all Catholic charities are not the same. For example, last summer, Catholic Charities out of Oklahoma City and a Baptist organization out of Texas were very involved in relocating the minors that were coming across the border, finding family connections somewhere in the country, and there appeared at the time to be some sort of a monetary advantage to them doing that. But that was Oklahoma City. The Diocese of Tulsa, were you guys asked to participate or did you deliberately say we would not be involved in the Fort Sill?
Well, Fort Sill is in the western half of the state.
Right. So that would fall under the Oklahoma City.
So the Diocese of Tulsa is the eastern half of the state. They did call and ask if we would send attorneys and staff over there.
Right.
But we chose not to do that. We really only operate in our side of the state. We didn't feel that it was probably the best use of our time.
Okay.
It wasn't where we were at. Okay. We don't operate in the same way as most of the other Catholic charities, and we make a lot of different decisions than a lot of the other Catholic charities.
Yeah, you don't do everything with them. You operate on your own.
There's 180 dioceses in the United States, and so each one has their own Catholic charities. Most of those Catholic charities are somewhat aligned with the Catholic Church, but many of them really aren't very closely aligned with their bishop. Our Catholic charities here, we are a part of the Catholic Church, and we fall in with our bishop, Bishop Edward Slattery. We are very, very close to our parishes and our pastors. So when I call my my buddy, Father Richard Chrysler, and say, hey, I want to talk with Pat Campbell, we've got a relationship, Father Chrysler and I do. And so there's
He's
a completely different mindset with our Catholic charities in how we operate. Our role is to evangelize. It's not social service.
Gotcha. Now, here's the news I want to break here because I don't think I've heard this or seen it anywhere else. So you guys get the call. Catholic Charities Tulsa gets the call from who? The State Department?
We get emails and phone calls from the State Department.
So they notify you a couple weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, look, we've got Syrian refugees coming. How many do you want?
Right. There was a call by the administration to increase, I think, the number of refugees by 10,000.
Okay.
And so they sent out a survey, if you want to call it that.
All right.
We receive it through the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops because there are go-between. And they say, how much do you want to increase your capacity? That's the terminology they use. And we wrote back and said, you know, we're really not comfortable with increasing our capacity. Our number is zero. We really don't want to change who we're receiving or what we're doing right now.
See, now that, Eddie, you haven't heard that, right? I didn't share it with you this morning. That's,
no.
That's not out in the news.
Right.
And all of the Catholic charities are being lumped together as you're going to be the conduit for these, you know, these Syrian Trojan horse to come into our,
right,
our community.
Well, you know, when we have people come who are refugees, they come typically with a lot of learning to do,
right,
whether they need to learn how to ride the bus or drive a car or open a bank account or learn how to go to the grocery store and shop.
Right.
And so we take on all that responsibility at Catholic Charities. We know that if somebody gets in a car for the first time and gets in an accident, that we share that burden. And we're not willing to take risk that we think is imprudent. And
right,
so to radically expand our program to include people who we're not sure of, it just isn't in our interest. It's not in the interest of our community.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my sure, seven kids are going to live in this community. I want it to be a safe community for my kids.
Mm. That's good. That's very good. If you're just joining us, he broke what I think is big news here. The Diocese of Tulsa, Catholic Charities in the Diocese of Tulsa, had been asked earlier how many Syrian refugees they were willing to take in at this time, additional refugees, and your answer was again?
Zero.
Zero. And to me, that's a big story there, and that should pretty much alleviate people's concerns about what's going on, at least in our listening area.
Right. We really want to make sure that we have the capacity to serve,
right,
in the proper way. And for us to quickly ramp up wouldn't be safe. It wouldn't be prudent. So we want to make sure that in every aspect of every program that we operate, we're doing it the right way.
It sounds to me like you're actually acting as mentors for these people when you do bring them in. And I was telling Eddie, when I was a kid after the Vietnam War ended, I lived in Northwest Pennsylvania. I lived the Diocese of Erie, Pennsylvania. But many of the churches, including the parish I went to, St. Andrew's, we adopted a family from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting was with these refugees, rather than have them, for example, like the Somalis in Minneapolis, where they're all congregated together, they were dispersed throughout the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And in each parish, we got them a house. We paid, you know, the first couple months' rent. Got the dad a job, you know, at one of the factories in town. The kids were enrolled at the Catholic school, but you know, and they were taught English. But there was actual church involvement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't just bring them here and say, well, you know, figure it out on your own.
Right. Well, that is what happens. And so for 45 years, the Catholic Church, starting with the Vietnamese boat people
right,
who came then into Fort Chaffee, were brought into the Catholic community,
right,
and we walk hand in hand in solidarity with them to help them with an apartment, with furnishings, with clothing, with a job, with food for the first couple of weeks.
Right.
We help them get their kids enrolled in school. We take them to health screenings. We make sure that they don't have TB. We help them to learn English,
right,
because we don't want them to be isolated. We want them to be integrated.
Right.
We want them to be successful. And if you look back at 40 years ago with that Vietnamese family you served and then
yeah,
pull it forward to now, they're successful. They're integrated. They're
By the way, the family we brought in, last time I checked, the dad was living in a much nicer neighborhood than my parents are living in.
I can believe
yeah,
it. I can believe it. Well, very often what happens with these refugees who come is that in order for them to be able to leave, they're the smart, upper class,
right,
very forward-thinking. They really, really are looking for freedom. They're
right,
looking for the American way. And when they come here, they then become incredible contributors to our community.
Well, even Eddie's talked, too, about in Louisiana how within one generation they had basically taken over the entire shrimping industry
yeah,
down there. I mean, because, you know, and it's not like they were sitting back looking for handouts or benefits. They wanted they aggressively wanted to be part of this and win.
Right. Now, you had mentioned, and I think we should talk about this, the money aspect.
Yes.
Okay, so what happens, just to be straight up with it, is that there is $1,125 that's available to a refugee when they come.
Okay.
And so what that does is it basically gets them into the apartment. You know how much an apartment costs in Tulsa?
Yes.
It doesn't go very far. Mm-hmm. At that point, the game's over. Now it's time to get a job.
Okay, does that money go to them or does it go directly to you?
That's direct assistance.
Okay.
It comes through us,
okay,
and we judiciously say you're not going to go and buy, you know, candy and CDs with this.
Right.
You're going to pay your rent with it. And so we help them in that process.
Do you make money by bringing refugees
in? So that's
in
the second half of it. So $925 or $950 comes to the agency per candidate. And we have a relationship for about 90 days that's contractual. then after that it goes on because we make good friends with them. So what we do with that is we use our box truck to go and get furniture for them. Right. We drive them to the health department for health screenings. We take them to get enrolled in school. We have staff, some of whom are parishioners that you would know, and we get them out there into the community to make sure these people integrate.
So, Eddie, you were right. They are getting rich off of this. They made $2,775 on those three Syrian refugees. What have you done with the money?
Well, they probably spent $4,000 on them, I would imagine, by the time you get done.
It's a losing proposition. Yeah, they call it a half and half, basically. Right. Yeah.
Do you have any reservations about taking government money? Because when I started teaching years ago, I taught in a Catholic school, mm-hmm. and for years they resisted anything from the federal government, because generally speaking, when you take federal dollars, strings come attached, and with those strings, control. Federal right. government has control. Do you have reservations? Are there things you won't take from the government because there's a conflict there?
Well, I think every Catholic agency should have one government contract so that they know that they should never get another one.
Okay.
They're bureaucratic. It's a mess. It's more trouble than it's worth. We had actually even looked at trying to receive the refugees but not taking the funding. But they wouldn't do it. They wanted to pair those together. We, Bishop Slattery, has an operating philosophy for Catholic Charities that is that we are to be representative of the Catholic people in eastern Oklahoma. And if we become laden with government money, then we will be not a reflection of the Catholic people, but we'll be a subcontractor of the U.S. government, either at the state or the federal level. That's not who we're meant to be. Our job is to be Christ's merciful love. Our job is to evangelize. And so we don't believe that government money is going to help us to evangelize. It's going to actually chain us and keep us from evangelizing. That's why we don't take very much. The only program that we have that does that is this refugee program. And the only reason we do that is because we hear the cases. We know the people, and we know that if it was my family member, I would want them out of that country, too.
Joined in studio by Deacon Kevin. I should point out, you do have a last name?
Sartorius.
There you go.
Call me whatever you like.
Yeah,
though.
Well, everywhere I saw yesterday, it was Deacon Kevin. So, from Catholic Charities. I want to ask you a question because, you know, you obviously absorb media. You see what's in the newspapers, on cable TV. Although you might not be able to listen to this program all the time, you hear talk radio. As somebody who is involved in the business, or actually with you, it's a ministry of relocating refugees, people coming into this country. What are you hearing, and what are your concerns?
Wow, that's a big question.
I intend to ask big questions. You said don't throw me softballs, so I'm not going to throw you softballs.
Okay. Well, I mean, I see that there's a genuine concern is what I see. And I think that we need to pay attention to that concern. And we need to demand that our government does a very good job of vetting the people who come here.
Right.
At the same time, though, I think that we cannot become we cannot let the terrorists win by making us completely close in on ourselves.
Right.
This is the greatest country on earth, and it has been and it will continue to be. But if we let the terrorists beat us down and make us crawl into a cave and hide because we're afraid,
right.
then they have won, even if they don't set off any bombs. They can remotely silence us.
Right.
We need to be not afraid. I mean, that's a pretty famous phrase from St. John Paul II. Be not afraid.
Right.
And act boldly. And that may mean militarily in some cases, but mm-hmm. I think far more often that means that we need to live the American ideal mm-hmm. and let the rest of the world say, I want that. Mm-hmm. I want to be like that. And it is when America shows that kind of leadership that we silence the terrorists, because they have nothing to offer.
Kevin, we're talking about the vetting. You think the government does a great job, but as you said, it took them two.
Now, three. Eddie, hold on a second. I'd say the government does a great job. I think they need to do a great job.
Okay, I hope they do a great job. Did I mishear that?
I don't want to say that I know how well they're doing.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to say, because, for example, the three Syrian, it was one family, right? A family
that's
of
right.
three. that has come here.
I have confidence in that family.
I believe it. But as you said, it took two years to get him here.
Right.
Before
right.
a year, two or three years to three, get him here uh-huh. of vetting. There's no way you could do that with the 10,000 or 80,000 that John Kerry's talking about bringing in a short period of time.
But Glenn Beck is doing that right now. I was telling Deacon Kevin yesterday about the Nazarene Project. This is a largely unreported story where Glenn Beck has raised over $12 million through his listeners. He has people on the ground in Syria. They are bringing Syrian Christians who are fleeing persecution here to the United States. They've got families to sponsor them, but they are thoroughly vetting them. Because of the collapse of the government over there, you can't check records like you can here in this country. But what he is doing is he's got people on the ground. They're talking to the pastor at that parish. Okay, so this guy over here, he's 25. I've known him. He was baptized in this parish 25 years ago. He goes to church, you know, every week. He's a faithful churchgoer. Mm-hmm. He's not some Trojan horse coming in here. But this is a guy who's doing this with a very small organization. But there is a way to vet people properly. My concern is I don't want to just say no to everybody, especially if you've got, and in particular, Christians who are seeking asylum because their lives are in grave danger in their country. That's, you know, you talked yesterday on TV about that's not who we are. We don't turn those people away. We've got a rich history of saying, look, we'll save you.
Right. Well, I think that Eddie's got a very good point. To expect that there'll be 10,000 that'll come this year is just almost foolhardiness.
Right.
The process, if it is working, takes longer than that. And so it's going to be a period of years. With the people we typically serve at Catholic Charities who are coming in a refugee status, they have been as long as a decade in a foreign country waiting to come because the process takes a long time and it's a long line. And so for that to be effective, we need to set our expectations differently, and that means you're not going to get 10,000 this year from Syria, I just don't think.
And if those kind of numbers are actually coming in, whether it's 10,000, 65,000, or 85,000, corners are being cut. Something's being done to expedite the process.
Right, and we've seen the result of that in Europe. And so we don't want that here, and we shouldn't allow that here.
All right. If you missed the big news early on, they're not bringing any additional Syrian refugees to Tulsa. So you can, I guess, breathe a sigh of relief there. We did get into a pretty interesting conversation off air about who they have been involved in recent years bringing to the Tulsa community. And this may surprise you because I even mentioned the crisis in Burma, but bringing Burmese people to Tulsa, and I know that some of them have a connection with ORU. Tell me about Catholic Charities, your involvement there, and what all this has entailed.
Well, what happens is there's a group of Burmese pastors who I think all went to ORU, and they're from a particular part of Burma. They're called Zomi Chin.
Okay.
And that area of Burma is Christian. The Buddhist government in Burma has not liked the Christians, has not liked the Muslims either.
Yeah, that right there, you know, most people, you think of Buddhists as pretty peaceful people.
You know, they got a pretty good brand, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Yet you're telling me.
They just sit around and meditate. Yeah,
but,
that's all they do.
But these people are fleeing because they're being persecuted because of their religious beliefs over there.
That's right. And so the Burmese Christians will flee to Malaysia or Thailand or India. They pack up and head out, and oftentimes they're chased even on the way out.
Wow.
And once they get to these other countries, they're in a holding pattern because they're really not they're illegal immigrants in these other countries.
And they sit in refugee camps.
That's right. They're often in a nowhere zone, basically. They don't have an opportunity to flourish wherever they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ends up happening is they apply to become refugees. The State Department goes through the same checks. The Homeland Security Office goes through the same checks on the Christians as they would anybody else. And then once they have slotted them, they will come to be reunited with a family member here in our Tulsa community. We have received about 278, I think it was, last year. And 90% of those were Burmese.
Because one of the criticisms is when you're bringing people in, this is about filling the pews. But with the Burmese, that's not the case.
Well, I would say of the 275, there might have been 15 or 20 that were Catholic.
Okay.
But the vast majority of them are not. We don't really get to choose. We resettle. But it's the State Department that fills the billets.
So people, especially non-Catholics, would say, well, why is the Catholic Church bringing people in that aren't Catholic? That doesn't. How does that help them?
Oh, holy cow. All of the people that we serve, almost 85% of them are not Catholic. We do not try and serve our own. We serve everyone because we see Christ in every person, even the people we don't know or don't like. And so I think that for us to serve a Burmese person, for us to serve an atheist or a Muslim, it's an opportunity for them to see that we recognize they were created in God's image and likeness, and that they were called to greatness. They were called to give glory to God. It's in a moment of evangelization, but it's not a hard press. Right. It's them seeing that the Catholic Church is going to reach out and understand their dignity.
So,
and
in other words,
you're
not bringing them here with the intention of converting them.
No.
You'd like that to happen, but
I want the whole world to be Catholic. Okay. I'll go on the air with that. But
there you have it, people. We finally got it out.
We knew there was an agenda.
There is an agenda.
It's not money. He's got something else up his sleeve.
Yeah, the deacon is called to evangelize. Yeah, but I think that how we do that is through what we call the corporal works of mercy.
Right.
We're going to feed, we're going to shelter, we're going to visit the prisoner, we're going to bury the dead, we're going to reach out, and in a very concrete and real way, we're going to serve other people.
Right.
Through that, they're going to find that God loves them, and hopefully that will bring them to a point where they understand that they're called to the church.
Right. Hey, since we've got a few minutes with you here, what are the biggest misconceptions about Catholic charities? What do you hear out there from Catholics and non-Catholics alike that simply it's not true, or it's a misrepresentation of who and what you are?
Sure. Well, I would say that you just hit the number one, and that is that we only serve Catholics. That is completely not the case. In Eastern Oklahoma, only 4% of the population is Catholic.
Well, it's even lower than because when I had Frank Keating on, he said 7%.
That's probably of Tulsa, and I'm talking Eastern Oklahoma.
Okay.
So I widened the circle a little bit larger, and that lowers the rate. And so we don't serve mostly Catholics. We serve people who are in need. If in Matthew 25, if I was hungry, you gave me to drink. Mm-hmm. He didn't say if I was hungry and Catholic, you gave me, so we reach out and help everyone in need.
Right.
Because we recognize their dignity. I would say another probably large misconception is that we are liberal or that we're conservative.
Right.
We're neither.
I have a real problem with this especially when they try to put the label, and they did this when Pope Francis came here. They talk about conservative Catholics. There is no such thing as a conservative Catholic. There are Orthodox Catholics. There are traditional Catholics. I totally reject the terminology conservative. By the way, while I'm at it, this bishop that we have here, and by the way, he's announced his retirement, so he's not going to be here much longer. There will be a new one. Slattery and Bishop Slattery and Eddie's heard him talk at the pro-life march as well, is a stand-up guy. He is so solid, it's scary. And I tell you, a lot of other dioceses throughout the country could use a guy like him. He's non-political too, which is actually, and we talked about this a little bit off air yesterday. That really is the smart thing. You don't want to get you need balance. You can't be in bed with this party or that party.
We have to rise above the political issues and look at the overarching piece, which is dignity, solidarity, subsidiarity. These are all technical terms, I suppose, but it's all Catholic thought. And then apply that to every issue so that the common good is what comes out of it. We're looking to build a society that in God we trust. It's on every dollar bill. It's on every quarter. That trusts in God and that abandons itself to the divine providence of God. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see a lot of this issue getting muddled, is instead of an abandonment to divine providence, to know that God is going to be with us here in the United States, we get all fearful. We need to be not afraid and be bold and be Christian and be Catholic. The whole world needs to be Catholic. That's the message. But that misconception that we are conservative or liberal instead of Catholic, oftentimes will pit people against us unnecessarily. It just isn't. It's not necessary.
I'm getting the notice that we're up against the clock. Before I let you go, real quick, if people want to find out more about Catholic Charities in Tulsa, where do we send them?
CatholicCharitiesTulsa.org. Okay. We have a great website, and we'd be happy to give you a tour. In fact, we need to get you guys out there and see the campus.
All right. Can we get the bishop to talk to Eddie? Maybe we can bring him back.
That's right.
Hey, great job, Kevin. Seriously, yeah. Thank
Deacon
you very
Kevin,
much.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You, Eddie.